You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is Will Mavity's interview with the costume designer for Harriet, Paul Tazwell.
There's not much time. You got to be miles away from here before dawn.
Where is she?
Follow that North Star. If there are no stars, just follow the river. Listen for them. Fear is your enemy.
Whoa. Easy now.
I'm gonna be free or die.
I don't know if you know how extraordinary this is, but you have made it 100 miles to freedom all by yourself. Would you like to pick a new name to mark your freedom?
Harriet Tubman.
Everybody, this is the Next Best Picture podcast. I have with me Paul Tazwell, the costume designer for Hamilton and most recently, Harriet. Paul, how are you?
I'm great. It's great to be here.
So obviously, you know, you've made quite a name for yourself in the stage world in the last decade or so. What brought you to the big screen?
I was asked to come on board by Casey. I've been so fortunate over my, you know, career, you know, 25 plus years. Working on amazing theater productions, some Broadway and you know some regionally, and you know I had not explored film work as extensively, and you know I think that now you know I'm very interested in expanding and moving in that direction in a, you know, in a much more proactive way, just, you know, to continue to be a creative person.
Well, so how would you say it's different making costumes for the screen where you have cameras that pick up tiny details versus making costumes for the stage in the Broadway production?
For me, it's not... You know, it is less about detail because I tend to be a very detail oriented designer. You know, where I imagine and see things up close and also see the value in that in that detail still being there from a distance. You know, if it's something that's for say. The Metropolitan Opera, that's a vast space that you do need to think about the scale of your detail. But I think, from film, the Broadway stage to film, that sensibility is very similar, goes hand in hand. But I would say that a big difference is what you are, the poetic license that you are able to use for a theater piece. So, what I was able to do with the 18th century for Hamilton versus how how an audience sees clothes, say for Harriet. Where they're going through spaces that are real spaces. They're real architecture. It hasn't been abstracted. They're going through a forest. That is it's all much more in an environment of reality. And it's all set up so that we're transporting the audience into that period and what was plausible in that period.
So, speaking of being in real environments, how did you get around the fact that you're filming in the South where it's very hot and the clothes that obviously these are based on are notoriously stuffy? Is that something you factored into the designs, just making them comfortable?
No, I didn't. Unfortunately
oh,
for the actors. I mean, it's the same situation for a theater piece for Hamilton as well. I mean, for a film, it's important to, stay as close as possible to, the fabrics that were used in the period. Right. You know, partly for, you know, because of how they look, and then also just how they move, you know, on a person's body. And you would, you know, one would be able to tell, even if you weren't a designer, you know, that something was off if the fabric is in the right weight, you know, if it doesn't feel like what they would actually have built, you know, or tailored, a suit coat, or frock coat out of, or what they would have made a dress out of, even though, it might be uncomfortable. And then you hope that, you know, it's like that was reality, you know, in that period, you know, there were no air conditioners, you know, there were no electric fans. So, you know, it was living life, as a struggle, you know, and, I think that it helps to set a real tone, I mean, you know, a realistic tone.
So if they're sweating on camera, that's exactly what they'd be doing at the time. So
that's what awesome. They would have been doing. That's now it would be, you know, it's a different situation if, you know, we're filming a scene where, you know, it really takes place in the winter and it's, you know, it's 80 degrees out or, you know, 90 degrees out. Some adjustments might have to be made, but it wouldn't be necessarily in the fabrics. You know, it would be cooling them down in some other way. That was not, you know, in a man-made way. But I even so, I think that, you know, as the designer, it's important for me to, you know, hold true to what it would have been.
You've watched them in unforgettable adventures, love affairs, and tragedies. Now it's time to hear their own remarkable stories. From the makers of Death of a Rockstar and Death of a Sports Star, this is Death
Ready.
Of a Film Star.
And action.
Starring Heath Ledger, Marilyn Monroe, Chadwick Boseman, Robin Williams, Carrie Fisher, and Bruce Lee. Search for Death of a Film Star in your podcast app. You've seen them tell stories. Now it's time to tell theirs.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our ninth season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
So you mentioned, obviously, that you're really adhering a lot to the historical details, to reality. But you also have a lot, it seems like, symbolically going on with Harriet's outfits and the colors. Tell me a little bit about maybe, despite all the realism, kind of the poetic touches that you tried to add.
Sure. We start with Harriet, you know, when we first see her, you know, she is on the plantation. She's owned by the Botus family. And the clothes, the dress that she is wearing, it's a blue-gray stripe linen dress that shows obvious wear, you know, that she has, you know, that this is the one dress that she has to wear to do everything that she has to do around the plantation, all the work that she has to do, wears it every day. She also has, you know, a corset and a petticoat on underneath as well. So she's dressed with all of the elements of, you know, a woman of that period and a slave of that period. And then we follow her in her escape and see how that dress deteriorates, you know, starts to fall off of her body after it's gone, you know, she goes into the rapids of, you know, of the river that she jumps into, she comes out and, you know, it's basically, you know, it's in tatters, you know, completely in tatters. And we're down to ground zero, you know, basically, where, you know, she's given a dress from, you know, it's a Quaker, you know, classic style that she is gifted from, you know, the Quaker family that she is rescued by. Once she goes into Philadelphia, she's introduced to Marie, who befriends her, and that she lives in Marie's boarding house. But through Marie, she starts to develop as a woman of the, you know, a woman of the city, and a free woman. And we see that she's creating her style. You know, there are dresses that are gifted to her so that she can go back to get her her family and, you know, other passengers that she helps to free. That green dress, that strong green that I use, was specific to, you know, keeping her connected to the earth and nature that she was going to guide, you know, her passengers through. And that was the start of, you know, seeing her, you know, because with that dress was given to her because it was a dress. It's a silk dress. It was iridescent, but it is potentially a dress that definitely you wouldn't find on a slave.
Right.
So, you know, it starts this idea of becoming a master of disguise. She also, you know, takes on male roles as well as she's disguising herself to ride under the radar of the slave catchers and wherever she's going. Then, you know, there's an outfit that is, you know, we see her run through the forest with again, a set of passengers, a set of slaves that she's helping to free them. And that's her bandit look, which is one that is this, it's this combination, this collage of both feminine clothing and male clothing together, which becomes a, you know, function forward outfit where, you know, she's putting together an outfit where that she can work in the way that she needs to work, or, you know, make it through the terrain that she needs to make it through. But it, you know, in that combination of male and female, she starts to look very powerful, as well as there's kind of a style about her. I mean, I think that from a modern eye, there's a stylishness about her that is attractive. But I think that it's more what I was trying to do was, you know, to give her a strength of character, and the eye that, you know, you see it in the poster, you know, it's this kind of sweeping, you know, coat that, you know, gives her some visual power. That as an idea is carried into her, you know, her power look, you know, probably the most powerful look that we see her in, which is this all red, you know, it's a really deep red.
Oh, yes,
coat,
I love that outfit.
Coat and red dress. And that's the peak of her poetic kind of scheme, clothing scheme, her track. Because it is heroic, because it gives her a superhuman quality. It resonates in that way. It's heraldic in a way, and you know, I was hoping to underscore that she, you know, had arrived as a hero and as a mythic figure. So that's kind of where, you know, and then our final look is her as a Union officer,
right,
leading the troops down the river.
That's such a cool scene, by the way. What about additional characters? I know, because there are significant historical figures that you have to, almost without them ever being addressed by name, the audience kind of has to know who they are. For example, I think Frederick Douglass pops up in the background in a couple scenes. Tell me a little bit about building some of the supporting and background characters.
All of those other characters, I mean, especially when they, you know, the names that we recognize, there are daguerreotypes that exist of the actual people. So it becomes, you know, you're balancing who the person that's cast along with who the actual person was and how we can move that image as close as possible to what, you know, who they were and how they dressed. You know, some of that is about hair, but most definitely, you know, it's the economic level and style of the clothing that, you know, I see represented in the daguerreotypes that exist. There was, you know, the abolitionist, you know, that kind of secret society. For Casey, she wanted to establish it. This was like, you know, they're the, let's say, the most bohemian, stylish group of Philadelphia. You know, they're the who's who of the artists and thinkers and writers, you know, of Philadelphia. So it's trying to give that feel in that scene, you know, where Harriet first meets them and is inducted into that society. Marie is kind of an amalgamation of many of the portraits, the daguerreotype portraits that I found, where there were many more than I ever thought that I would be able to find of free black people in America. I was delighted to be able to find those photographs and of an showing an economic level that was really refined, and you know, really beautiful clothing. So it was reinterpreting those images on Janelle, and setting her up as kind of the stylish figure that is achievable. Not that that it's important that she's stylish, but it is important that she's a self-made woman, and sophisticated in that.
Well, we're about out of time, but since you told me you're hoping to maybe stay in the film world, do you have your eyes set on any future projects, maybe working with Lynn on Tick, Tick, Boom or anything?
I won't be doing Tick, Tick, Boom, at least not that I know of right now, but just designed West Side Story with Spielberg directing, and that was most of my summer, and that was about a month into the fall, and it was an amazing experience, really an amazing experience, and I think the film is going to be really beautiful, and I'm looking forward to it coming out next Christmas. So we've got a year to wait.
Oh my God, that's going to be fantastic! I can't wait to see that, and I can't wait to see your work in it.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me, and I look forward to hopefully hearing your name pop up throughout the awards season. You did a fantastic job with the film, and I'm glad it's being such a success right now.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It was my pleasure. Thanks.
All right. Enjoy your afternoon.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Will Mavity's interview with the costume designer for the film Harriet, Paul Tazewell, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, Acast, CastBox, and also on Spotify. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you will get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening, as always. We shall see you all next time.
Don't you go to the jungle? I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X grown-up.
Every week, the Gen X grown-up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it.
Right.